All right. Hello, listeners at home. I am your notably esteemed eel enthusiast, Daisy McNamara, and today I am joined by our lovely cast and crew. Do you all want to introduce yourselves, names and pronouns?
Hi, I'm Luce Oakcliffe, they, them, or AM pronouns. I am the co-showrunner, writer, occasional director, composer, and sound designer for Eela's Choice. Okay, there we go.
I'm Tanya Milievich, she, her, hers.
Howdy, I'm Ray Lundberg, they, them, and I play Ran Fishercliffe.
Hey, I'm Shads, they, them, and I play Nama.
All right, I'm Caroline Orejuela, and I use she, they pronouns, and I voice Prin.
We have received, let me check the number, a total of 24 questions with the duplicates mixed together for brevity's sake, and we're going to ask our lovely actors starting off and then move into the more cast and crew related questions for Lou and myself. So, question one from Ash, mostly for the actors. Do you have any headcans about your characters that don't make it on screen?
Mine for Ran is I think that maybe they actually have a lot of tattoos, but most of them aren't visible most of the time. Like, they're pretty covered up when they're working in the pits. But then, you know, get them drunk and they're like, hey, you want to see my tattoo of fish doing the can-can?
Cannon!
Not sure about can-can, but cannon, possibly.
Yeah. Don't even worry about it. It's fine.
Yeah, I would imagine there's a lot of tattoos in Espen. In fact, that's canonical because Spartina was doing them.
Spartina is just sitting there with Ran, just like, uh-huh, yeah. I know your dad's really such... Will you hold still?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Okay, how about y'all?
Go on, Caroline.
I've got... Oh, yeah, go ahead. Me?
Yeah.
I said go ahead to myself. I have thought about this a lot, and I think that Prin, when she gets really drunk, loves to arm wrestle people. Like, just challenge anyone to an arm wrestling competition. And it's, like, not even that drunk. Just, like, two drinks in, and the confidence is like, all right, who wants to arm wrestle me? And she'll definitely lose. I think she's not, you know what I'm saying? Like, she's not going to win, but she just wants to try.
All right. I now want to see the outcome of Prin and Pugil arm wrestling. Pugil is going to win, but I want to see how funny it gets.
It's true.
All right, Shads, you got anything?
All right, so if we're working with bad legs, you gotta have something to do in your spare time, right? And around the bay, when you're just trying to find something to put yourself into and also don't want to invest too much in it, you goes to rug hooking. I fully believe that Nama, like in downtime, does some rug hooking.
Awesome.
I would just say probably, the various types of clothing my character used to wear. I kind of liked the whole idea of being able to feel the different textures and the beads. And, you know, I personally, I love like shiny sequins-y kind of things. They're pretty fun. So yeah, I'd love to sort of explore that a little bit more.
Excellent. Remind me, once we've gone through the questions, to find the Art of Mary in episode five, that is the most gorgeous shit I've ever fucking seen.
Oh, yes, Arian's one.
Because there is some gorgeous interpretations of the beadwork and embroidery on her clothes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was really
from
cool.
From Arian Wells, who made my day and life when I saw that.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
I'll pull it up for you later. My headcanon for Anne Frith is that she's a redhead.
Hmm.
I don't know why she is in my head, she just is.
So true.
Noted for future reference.
Noted for future reference. All right. Question two from Gritty. Let's have everyone go around in character and describe your perfect date. Location, activities, food, time of day, etc.
No. Just no. Why would you even ask that?
Aromantic king.
Ask the aromantic character about the perfect date.
Absolutely not.
Just won't. No, shan't.
I'm just going to write this down in the chat.
Okay, well, thank you so much for asking about my perfect date, because I have literally a million ideas and I just wish someone would ask me out already, because I would love to go on a date. But for me, I just think anything spontaneous. Like, I'd love to run around a city late at night until like 3 in the morning, maybe drinking a little bit, and then just like running through a fountain or something and just like splashing each other. I think that would be so much fun. So yeah, that's my ideal date. Thanks for asking. And I love Gritty.
I'm loving everyone's commitment to doing it in the voice. Not what I necessarily expected, but you know what? You did indeed stick to the instructions.
I'm an instruction follower, I would say.
I respect it. All right. Who's up next? That would be... What's Nana's perfect date?
You know what? It's just a break. It's just getting away from everything. So... We're going out, we're going to brunch or something, and maybe having a little indulgence, something with pastry and berries. And you know what, that there, that's the great baseline for us.
Nama just wants Nama a break.
Nama continues to need a fucking nap.
Yeah.
That's so good.
You know, it's just done a little bit of relaxation, right? I don't know if the date's actually going to go anywhere. Maybe it's just an excuse to get out and just do that one little pastry.
We've all been there. How about you, Tanya?
Well, I'm really glad someone asked, because I think I would like to go to an amusement park all made out of eel bone and have wind chimes always playing around me wherever I go. Maybe that would be annoying after 2 minutes, but that's okay.
Mary, just let me know who I need to tell to get this date to happen, okay? I will let them know.
It's the new university project. They're going to build an amusement park.
Excellent.
To get some more money coming in.
The White Chander family fortune.
Yes.
Honestly, please, God.
This is writing to their parents. Dear Dad, I need money. Very important. XOXO Prin Mary.
Yes, that's what she does with the fortune.
Amphrith/AledByCats definitely wants to go out for seafood. Some city stomping, you know.
Don't step on the orphanage.
I can't believe we canonized the orphanage getting stepped on based on some shit Mike said.
Mike.
That was an improvised line from Mike, and we kept it in.
This is why Mike is not allowed to improvise.
Because he's the funniest person in the world.
Not allowed.
We'll get into Mike in question 7.
We will, yes.
All right. From question number 3 from Arian Wells. This question is to the cast. How easy was it to understand your character, and maybe what helped you get into the character that you played?
I really was drawn to Ren when I first saw the casting call. I don't remember exactly how they were described, but it's kind of like, I got the sense of like gruff but sarcastic, and I connected with that. And then I think Lou said something about like, oh, well, Ren's just like really angry all the time. You can't always see it, but it's there, just like angry at like, you know, their place in the world and the things they can't change and stuff. And I was like, yeah, okay, I got that. So I think that made it easy for me to understand.
And you nailed it.
Yeah.
Yes.
I would agree.
All right. Who's next? That would be Caroline.
It's me. Okay, so Prin is a lot more of a rule breaker than I am. So I think for me, getting like finding what is different, because I think we have a lot in common too. Like, I like to have a good time. I like to try new things. I think Prin is like that. But I think Prin also is a little more impulsive than me and a little more enthusiastic than me. And I, keeping in mind those things, like her impulsivity and her energy, really helped me get into character every time. Yeah. And then just, I would also think about, like, I don't know, Faith from Buffy. Like, but not mean, like nice, bubbly Faith from Buffy. That was kind of my, like,
I could see that.
Yeah. I don't know. So that, all of those things.
there was almost a little bit of, I want to call it bitterness, but a sort of resentment of your treatment by the world mm-hmm. into Prin that yes. I really liked. I hadn't known if I'd originally seen.
Oh, that's
but I loved it once it was there.
Oh my gosh. That's so, thank you very much. That's what, again, this is the actor's, you know, job, but reading her lines, that's, I got that. I don't know what about her I did, but I was like, yeah, she doesn't want to be in school. She wants, mm-hmm. yeah, anyway. But thank you. That's so nice to hear.
Yeah, she absolutely doesn't want to be in school. Like, she,
no.
Like, I
school is for losers.
Yeah. It was all the kind of ADHD energy of people I've known, like, went into that one. Like,
very heavy rejection sensitive dysphoria.
Yeah, big RSD, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Big RSD. All right, Shads, what you thinking?
Well, I took Nama to be the epitome of me nerves are shot and just went with that.
Yeah, is that another Newfoundland meme?
We're learning so much about Newfoundland over the course of this.
Yeah.
That's great.
For me, I put a lot of, I guess, myself in there. She's pretty mischievous. There's like this underlying sadness to everything, takes everything seriously and wants to help. But at the same time, doesn't always follow the rules either. And then finally is able to contribute, and she's like, transformed by being able to just to help and be part of it. So it was a lot of fun kind of playing with the character. And then I originally auditioned just with, you know, an American accent, and then I was like, oh, do you want me to do like the Serbian thing? I mean, because it's, you know, we're trying to represent as many you know, countries and areas as we can. So then I had even more fun with that, because the idea that I had when I saw the audition was one thing, and then when I really delved into the story, I was like, oh, wow, this is awesome. I can't wait to have the complex, the character. I enjoy, like, being very natural, if I can, with characters. So this was really well written, and I liked the representation and how various things in the sound design were presented. So, yeah, so it was an honor.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I would actually be interested, like, I'd never written a partially sighted or sight impaired person before. So I went to, I read a lot of things. I went and spoke to my friends who are sight impaired. Like,
we did have a consultant for sensitivity.
Is there anything I could have done better there, or could do better in future seasons? Or,
you know, one thing, I don't know about better, but one thing that I found really funny was like how everyone's like, yeah, you're blind. Oh my God, I don't even know what to say. Like, I don't know what words to say. Yeah, you saw that. I mean, no, that part is like, it's funny just because it's so true. That's, people are so aware of their wording, and they feel so awkward, and then it just makes the whole situation even worse. So I kind of like how there were some points where she ignored it. She's just like, yeah, okay, anyways, moving on. That was great.
That was what I read.
You've gotten
this
16 times today, and I don't care.
Yes, and then she's sassy.
Yeah. I put in the kind of touching the face thing, because I read 100 things from side to bed people saying, we don't do this.
Don't do that. Exactly.
Stop saying we do this.
Exactly. I like how you play around with the sound design. I'd say definitely more of that would be fun, too, especially with if she's the focus and she's navigating, she's probably going to use a lot of, like you've already been doing a lot of, like, sensory smells and sounds and the landmarks that she's negotiating. Or maybe she can get a guide dog eventually.
Maybe she can get a guide dog.
Huh.
Do we want to sound design a guide dog? We can come.
I can find dogs. Dogs, yeah. I did consider us like assistive animals as well, like support animals and that kind of thing.
Yeah, or even like a
specialist.
Now,
I know a support eel isn't very useful.
Yeah.
But
maybe a land, like a animal that, because I like her connection to nature, so it'd be kind of neat if she was able to I don't know, get a bird or something that she could train, because she's connected to like the earth, and that part was really neat. But yeah, I have a guide dog, so if we ever needed Foley, I could record her.
Excellent.
I love that. What? That would be so awesome.
Yeah.
She's a yellow lab.
All right.
I'll have a think about that. I've not considered, like, I considered a lot of kind of about how you have to learn how to use the assistive technology and that needs to be trained and that kind of thing, but not considered animals.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
We will definitely think on this. This is very cool, but I think we've got to stick to our schedule.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Like,
we've gotten so caught up in creating a better podcast that we forgot what we're doing. It happens all
the
time.
Okay, yeah, sorry, questions. My bad.
AMC, a mysterious conger.
Yay.
Who is everyone's favorite character and why? Pugil. I'm sorry. I love you all so much. My himbo has my heart.
Okay, fair enough. hello to AMC, who makes the Vesta Clinic and is adorable. I
gotta put my vote in for Blethyn. He really surprised me as a character, because it first sort of sets him up as like the sort of unyielding, traditional kind of guy that his kids are naturally gonna butt heads with. But he, like, you can, even though he's sort of off screen for some of it, you can really see him change, and like, he's willing to change his mind when he discovers new information, you know. And the way that he agrees to train Marion Prynne at the end, I thought was really sweet.
That's a good answer. I think mine is Mary, just because I'm in the most scenes with her, and I like her. She's mischievous, she's funny, but in like kind of a dry way. And it just cracks me up every time, the banter between the two. So, yeah, I gotta say Mary.
I am genuinely surprised that no one has said Sawbones yet, because there's my vote.
Oh,
easily.
My God. I was about to say that. Anyway.
Good.
Honestly, Mike is the funniest person that we know.
Honestly.
Mm-hmm. And Sawbones is just the essence of that humor.
As soon as I started writing that character, I'm like, that's Mike. And then just like the general Mike-ness just started infecting the writing, because he's a monster. He's an awful monster of sass. Oh, we love you, Mike. You monster.
We love you, Mike.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Yeah, she's just very witty. Laughing with that guy is very fun. Yeah.
All right.
I suppose I should technically fight that. No, I'm sorry, shouldn't I? I have no favorites, and all I love all my children equally. No. So the most interesting people to write for me were Mary, because she has the being an outsider to Eskimith means she can look at everything with a different perspective. I liked writing Principal Adebwe Vicklin because I love classy villains, and like, I love the villains who are apparently extremely respectable and therefore get away with things a lot. And Blethyn was also good to write because I deliberately wrote him to speak with a kind of poetic rhythm, because he spent all his life speaking in rhyme and rhythm and that kind of thing. And David managed to get that to work as well. I don't know if I'd kind of written it into the cadence of the speech, but he made it flow that way. Spartina is super fun. I started channeling Mike for that. Everybody's amazing.
So you love all of your children.
I love all my children. I love all the children. Like, everybody's so good. Oh, yeah. Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
From Ash, what bit of your performance are you most proud of?
I'll say that the part I had the most fun doing was, I think it's episode 4, where Rand just did the storm calling and then is sort of on this like giddy kind of high from it. Like, wow, I can't believe I just did that. And like horrible things are about to happen, but for the moment they're like really excited and just sort of elated. And I had fun just being a little manic with that.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I really love the scene when Mary comes out of the water and I'm like crying, or Prynne is crying and just like, I don't know. I just had a lot of fun figuring out Prin in that moment, and Prin in sadness and fear, but also, like, yeah. So I that's a moment I'm really proud of. I like that scene a lot.
I had fun with the scenes with Ray, where we were both, like, trying to... where we were both being snippy, but not too much, you know? Like, hi, I love you, but I am so peeved at you right now. And... also, that final scene, I was actively crying when we were recording that.
God, I was crying when I was writing it.
Can I say, Shad's first-time actor absolutely killed every aspect of this role and should be worshipped.
Mm. Oh, I would not have believed that. You should be very proud.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that was impressive. I was not that good when I started.
But yeah, they are the best and awesome, and I'm going to keep praising you. Okay. Oh, I also acted. The screaming was fun. All those screams and growls and horrible noises Ale Bycatch makes, those are me.
Yeah, with extra sounds.
Lou just does things to them. But it's a lot of me. I think I was in my... because the place I live now is on a main road. And I cannot scream while here. So I waited till my parents were out of town, went over to their house, hung out in their basement, and just broke my throat for like an hour.
Ouch.
And all that's Ale Bycatch. So that's what I would say is the most fun.
Miss Tanya.
We miss Tanya. I'm sorry, Tanya.
No, you're good. I like the part where she was drowning. It was like such a low where she's like, yes, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to die. It was fun to go to that. And then the juxtaposition to the very end with, like, that big battle where she's stronger as a character and more confident. So just the 180 turn emotionally is always fun.
Your drowning noises were amazing.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. How the hell did you do that?
I have no idea.
Generally, were you waterboarding yourself?
I think, if I'm remembering, I think maybe I had... I don't remember. Did I... because I've done this before, it blends in. I don't remember if I actually got a bowl of water and like did it that way, because sometimes that sounds more real or not. I'll have to listen to it.
Oh my god. It did make my favorite, one of my favorite scenes of the show, just the sound design and the performance and the music all coming together. It's just so gorgeous.
I was just cackling to myself. I'm like, these are great. I'm going to put these behind with extra filters, and there's going to be awesome. More, even more water noises. Like,
I'm trying to see if I can get a link to this fan art.
Just, oh, wow.
Of this scene.
Honestly, that episodes 5 and 6 were really, really fun to sound design because of the performances people gave me. Between like the poetry and the crying and the drowning noises, and I'm like, oh, this is gonna be horrible.
I remember at this point I was working in a kind of shitty lab job, and I remember texting Lou from my lunch breaks where I was doing this. I've put the art of this scene in the chat if any of y'all want to look at it. It's Mary being cool as hell in front of a giant eel. But I remember texting Lou, like, it feels like music. Even just the dialogue cut, the way the words worked together, the rhythms and the performances, it just worked immediately. It was the easiest thing I've ever had to edit because it just went in and it was perfect. Mm. It was very, very good, and I love you all. Okay. All right. Next up. I don't know how to pronounce this.
That is Dutch, I think. In Mysterious of Paling, I think. But don't quote me on that.
Thank you, Lou. Not counting eels, what's your favorite aquatic creature?
I gotta go with coelacanth, I think. Something about the story of, like, thinking they're extinct and then finding them again just gives me hope, I guess. And one time I got to see a live coelacanth at an aquarium, and that... it was just incredible.
Okay, but what aquarium?
I can't remember. That's what sucks.
Shaz wants to go.
I want to go. I've just grabbed my coelacanth painting, and I took out my coelacanth earrings today to put in the eel earrings. I am so for coelacanth. You are so right.
Mine is an octopus. I just think they're so smart and fun. And one time when I was at an aquarium, there was this octopus that was like kind of coming to the front of the enclosure and like fanning all of its its stuff in front of us, like putting on a show for the audience, and it just made us, me and my dad, laugh so hard. So I just like octopuses.
Octopodes.
Octopi, octopuses, octopodes.
You know how it goes.
There's no agreed upon name. They're all correct. Okay.
If we're ruling out extinct creatures, because I love my Dunkleosteus very much, I think I'm going to have to go with hagfish. And one of my life goals is I want to feel the hagfish slime. I want to grab them, this naughty boy.
I just want to see what it's like.
We need to experience slime time.
We need to experience slime time. What was it? It was on World Hagfish Day. You sent a video of your calendar with slime time on it. And I think I was the only one who knew what it meant. Slime time.
Hagfish.
Okay.
Tanya?
Mine would probably be penguins, just because they're survival mechanisms. Like, they basically protect each other's families until, you know, the penguins can go out on their own. But they also stay in the water for a long time and manage to, you know, stay ahead of predators mostly.
I respect it.
One for the birds there.
Fun fact. I have seen penguins in person 4 times in my life, and each time I broke down crying at how perfect they were. It was just me sobbing surrounded by children in a zoo.
Aww.
I have held them, and they peck like a motherfucker.
There was one we saw at Chester Zoo that was the saddest penguin in the world, and it was just standing on its own away from all the other penguins going, "Aah!" You're like, aww, it's the goth penguin in the corner.
Oh, poor baby. Octopus or sharks if I can't pick eels, but I studied marine biology. That was what I got my undergraduate degree in.
Cool.
So crabs are also way up there. You'd be hard pressed to find a marine creature that I do not love.
I like anything which has a single tube for both mouth and anus. You know, sea cucumbers, anything like that. That's the joke answer. I really like basking sharks. They just kind of chill. They just float around with their big mouths open, doing stuff. Like.
All right. From a mysterious eel. Out of the entire cast and crew, who committed the most crimes?
Mike.
Mike, also, Shaz, you drew a big titty ale by cat, so that's a crime. Too.
So many memes.
Fair.
We don't know what crimes the people who were async recording committed. There might have been all kinds of crimes that we wouldn't know about.
Might have been all kinds of crimes, but we don't know about it.
Nope. I was going to say, I'm going to have to take y'all's word for it. I feel bad, but...
No, that was Mike voted most likely to derail the recording by being funny as fuck. There's a reason that after Mike shows up, the before Mike episodes in the blooper reel, I think it's about 5 minutes. After Mike enters, it's another 30.
30, which I then had to transcribe.
Anyway, so, Mike. A mysterious eel. Is Newfoundland a real place? Please show your work. Shads, do you want to answer this for us?
Please account for Newfoundland.
The biggest celebrity in Newfoundland is a giant anthropomorphic bologna log named Mr. Big Stick, and everyone loves him so much that when he shows up at parades, he upstages Santa Claus.
A log.
I don't believe this is real.
So, no. The answer I'm getting is no, Newfoundland is not a real place.
Oh my god. No. What?
Mr. Big Stick is a great drag name, though.
So yeah. Honestly, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Catch me. My drag sona.
Every now and again, Shads will just come in with some Newfoundland fact. Just
my favorite thing is fish kissing.
The fish kissing? What? Oh.
Yeah, the screechins, where we tell tourists if they want to be an official Newfie, you need to take a shot of a really strong, harsh rum, say, indeed I is me old cock, and long may your big jib draw, and then kiss an actual frozen codfish.
I thought Shad was making this up until they sent me a picture of the president of some country kissing a cod.
Not real.
Nope. Newfoundland's not real.
Yeah, we've all got a consensus. Newfoundland is not real.
But it should be. Because it's funny.
But it should be. But I wish it was. I believe that one day Newfoundland can be a real place.
But Shads has added receipts in the chat right now.
Oh, no.
Is this the existence of Mr. Big Stick?
It's national Canadian news where they were like, guys, look what Newfies are up to right now. Like, they're worshipping Big Stick.
What are the Newfies up to today?
Yeah. And every so often, Shads will just say something like, we've got these new kittens from Dildo. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds like a Newfoundland place.
It was named before that was a thing.
I accidentally adopted three of the Dildo gang. They're just here now for good.
I just call them the Dildo kittens. Like, how are the Dildo kittens doing today?
They're excellent kittens and we love them. Okay. Right. Question 9, I've smashed two similar questions together from Moss. So, why eels? What inspired the world building? And Pele, what inspired the eel magic the show was using? What was the thing that made you guys think, gotta have eels? The answer is, I like eels.
Yeah.
There actually isn't a really deep reason. I think originally in the concept when we were talking this out, I had mentioned we could use whales. And then you were like, what if we put in eels? And I said, yes, I will marry you.
Yeah, we knew. I was aware that Daisy was quite into eels, like big into eels. There had been many eel-related jokes. I was also aware that Pacific Obadiah was scared of eels and that this was also quite entertaining. So when Daisy was like, I've had this idea for something about, you know, bycatch and wastage in the sea and and that kind of thing, but it could be about whaling and fishing. And I'm like, but what if eels, Daisy? I know you like eels, so because it's a good gimmick. It is like
it is a good gimmick,
and
no one else has done eels.
It's original, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not aware of any other eel based fiction podcasts
yet.
No, me either.
If you're out there, please tell us, like, let's be eel friends
because we want to hang out. But yeah, it was this is a old running joke of I just like eels, and before I had met my friend Kale, I listened to their podcast Sinkhole, and in one episode they make a reference to how eels are weird, and I was like on Twitter, fuck yeah, eels, as I want to do. So in the Q&A for that podcast, they started calling me the notably esteemed eel enthusiast Daisy McNamara. And I thought that was the funniest shit in the world, and I've been using it as my title ever since. So then it became a thing for me. I remember, Lou, the first time we met and I introduced myself as Daisy McNamara, you said, why do I hear eels when I see your name?
Yeah. Just your name had always been associated with eels.
That's so funny.
Because I'm the notably esteemed eel enthusiast. Anyway, so the answer for why eels is we love them. And what inspired the world building and the eel magics? Let me check later on and see if we have more bigger world building questions. Oh yeah.
We do later,
We'll discuss world building and the world building specific questions then, but we'll get there. All right, we are back. Caroline and Ray have to go do real life things, but we are so thankful to them for coming on. And we still have Shads and Tanya for a little while, so let's crack on.
Okay.
We have, from Moss, how much fun did y'all have with the shanty? Lou, you want to take it?
Oh, the sea shanties. I would love to hear people's opinion on the sea shanties as well. But I would like to shout out all the actors who I press ganged into singing, who were acting but weren't, some of whom are here and some of whom I cornered at the Shadows at the Door live event and demanded that they sing for me. Thank you, David. Also the Anguilliform chorus, so Diego Herrera, who handed all their stuff in super fast and allowed me to try everything out and see how... I had Diego. To learn how to align songs, like how to align more than one voice together for songs to that. And I refused to auto-tune. The idea of auto-tuning hurts my soul. I wanted to sound like a... I wanted to sound like a rough-and-ready choir of sailors are all singing a sea shanty together. Hornets of October's Children, Derek Valen and Elijah Harmer, both gave me amazing improvised harmonies, a bass one in the case of Derek and like a high soprano in the case of Elijah. And things, so because when I asked people who were singing, I said, can you give me basically one take of just singing along with me, and then one take of any fun stuff you want to do. And both of them did things that really made a massive difference to like the harmonies, especially on the Weaving song and on the full version of the Ale Bycatch shanty, the one that's the theme tune.
A little bit of Stormcaller's Lullaby too, because I remember using Elijah as to follow, because Elijah has a gorgeous high
beautiful
voice,
soprano, yeah.
And I was desperately trying to match their notes.
Yeah, that I wrote an upper part for that one myself. And Elijah sang it, and Elijah put extra stuff in it as well. It definitely made those songs, to be honest. Meg Molloy-Tewton, who makes Kingmaker Histories, who did the absolutely the creepiest part of the Elvery Jack chant thing. Like, really, really creepy voices on that. That was great. But, yeah, so I did have a lot of fun with the chanties, but I was really super perfectionist about them as well. I was there for ages trying to get them aligned up. I mean, I don't know how they were for people who weren't there poking at them all the time, but...
Yeah. I love them. I listen to them regularly. This is a thing for me. I am scared of needles, so when I'm getting shots, I will often sing to keep my breathing even. So the Weaving song has become my go-to getting a shot song, because it's something I have to really focus on to stay in rhythm. Hmm. And it always gets complimented by whoever's drawing my blood. So you're very popular among nurses.
Phlebotomists. Phlebotomists like my sea shanties. Good to know. Okay.
Yes, good to know. All right, that's us. Y'all have any opinions?
I really liked it too. It definitely sounded like happy, joyous in the beginning. And, you know, everyone was in sync. So when I heard it as someone who wasn't part of the singing, I thought everyone maybe recorded it on Zoom together or something. It sounded so in sync. It was really cool.
No, this was all asynchronous. Lou is just that good.
Wow. That's awesome.
Thank you. That was me just aligning. Just there.
Aligning for hours, I imagine.
They're on Audacity with the spectrogram, just like trying to make people's sea sounds line up with each other.
Wow. It came out great.
Thank you.
Yeah. The one time during the sync recordings when anyone tried to do chanting at the same time, what was it? We created an auditory abomination or something. It was not.
I think I just remember Mike was reading from Mary at the time. So in like a little sweet Mary voice, that was the most discordant thing I've ever heard.
Yes.
The only real way you can sing with people on Zoom is if one person leads and everybody else turns their sound off and then sings with that person. Yeah, it's just about possible to do it that way. But yeah, but when everybody's singing asynchronously along with whatever, so I give them like a guide track and I try and sing it myself as simply as I can, so that people can kind of follow along with it, and then when I put them together they go together well, but I do move phrases around a lot and change pauses and that kind of thing. It takes a lot of tinkering.
I imagine.
All right. Number 11 from Arian Wells, our beloved. Mm-hmm. My question is to the creators. Which scene or moment was the most challenging to write, and which moment was the easiest to write? Lou, you did the majority of the writing, so I'm passing it off to you again.
This is the final scene of episode 6. It's just, yeah. Mm. It's really sad, and I was crying as I was writing it. And apparently everyone who was recording it was crying as they were recording it as well.
Actually, for me, it was Mary's introduction at the station. We had a lot of difficulty with, I remember going back and forth of, in the early stages of writing her, how she would describe things.
Yeah.
And basically being like, how do we focus pretty much on what she can smell, what she can feel, what she can hear? Which, great for an audio medium, but given most of the other narration is focused on what the characters can see, it was a little bit of a twist. So that was fun to do. I just remember being at work, being like, no, she wouldn't say that.
Yeah. There were several points where...
She would not fucking say that, us back and forth to each other.
Yeah. There were even stuff that I missed that Sarah, who was the sight-impaired reader consultant, went, nope, you wouldn't do that. Like, yeah, wouldn't say that.
Yeah. What was the easiest to write? Horrible descriptions of ocean monsters for me.
You like that shit.
I can do that in my sleep.
Actually, the conversation between Mark Nixon and Miria's characters, the two captains.
The Captain's Helmswell.
The Captain's Helmswell, that flowed really easily because I've been on Zoom calls where I've seen the two of them talking to each other and kind of sassing each other. So I was just kind of like, I'm just going to let those two talk to each other the way they do normally. I mean, I've been around them in person as well after Shadows at the Door live show. I'm just like, just let the two vibes that those people have with each other come out in the captains. And then the two of them, again, did it really well as well. Like, I think they might have recorded it together when they were in the same room or something, maybe.
I don't know. It doesn't sound like they did in their dialogue.
Okay.
There aren't pauses for each other.
Okay.
But it was very fun to listen to their stuff. Especially I liked Mark's delineations of, I'm going to give you a bitchy take. That was just very fun for me. I love when people talk to the editors. I think it's the funniest thing in the world.
Yeah.
I really want to move on to question 14. We have a couple questions to get to, but I'm going to go rogue and say, from a mysterious eel, what is a dry pit, and why do you belong there?
It's me that belongs there. It's me that belongs in the dry pit.
So the dry pit is a Kale invention of when we first had the scripts written for season one. We asked our friend Kale Brown to look over them and asked them to be very, very harsh. That was my request because I, one, respect Kale as a writer, and two, know that they will, if they really think something can be good, they will go all in to be sure it's the best possible. And at some point, Kale started threatening to put us both in a dry pit because they know that I cannot be in the dry. So their normal threat of a wet ditch is not going to work.
It's me for putting too much exposition. Things like, I write things that should be maps.
That's why we have
I write too much town. I write too much town, and I write too many details of places. And I hope that anybody who listens to that, who's been to Whitby, will recognise exactly where Eskimith is, because I put so much damn detail in about that town that I probably shouldn't have done.
Yeah, so the reason we belong in the dry pit is because the original scripts of Eeler's Choice were a little more novel-y than they were the form of audio drama it became.
Also, I write sounds that I should... I write, the character hears this when I should be just putting in sound design. Mm-hmm. Because it's an audio medium and I'm an idiot.
In your defense, the next time after the first Kaling, Kale also hates that we made them a verb, but I think it's funny. Mm-hmm. the next script that you brought to them, they said, was good. And I think your response was, and I quote, "But what about the pit?
What about the pit?" Yeah.
Or because you'd learned enough that you don't need to be in the pit anymore.
Yeah, it's because because they told me there was too much writing of noises. And so I turned an entire page into purely sound design out of spite.
And it's better for it.
Yeah, it's just like, fine.
Out of spite, I'm doing what you tell me to do.
All of it. No words then. It's all sound design.
and
it's it
good.
Was better for it.
It all made it feel so much, so real, because there's only so much you can do with sound design, but when you're painting the picture of, like, the topography and the geography of the place, it makes it feel like you're, like, it's not a novel. It's almost like when you're playing D&D and the, you know, the game master is painting the picture for you before you get into, like, the action. So it makes it feel very, very vivid and real and 3D. I think it's a nice combination of the two. It's not too much of anything. It's a really good balance.
That's a really good way of putting it.
Thank you. And that is mostly on Kale for beating me around the head with a stick.
Bless Kale. We love you, Kale. Please don't put me in the pit. I've been good. From Ash. What's something about the world / saying / lore / whatever that you really wanted to get on screen but weren't able to? I'm also going to open this up to our actors if you had any ideas that didn't make it in.
First of all, thanks Ash, good buddy Ash from Law of Names, for submitting so many questions.
They're great questions too.
Listen to their shows like Breathing Space, Fedding Frontier.
You'll hear some friendly voices on Breathing Space, as well as Paranormal, Arcadia, California, some upcoming shit that Ash and I are working on.
No, there is nothing that I put in that I wasn't going to put in. Anything I was going to do as a lore dump, I converted to dialogue. Anything else we've bumped to possible later seasons. It would have been nice to give people things like the calendar and days of the week stuff, but again, that, like, I can't just give people an almanac in a podcast. Two things I think make a world are particularly make world are food and music, and I think I might have liked to put more food in, but I think I have sufficient music.
For me, I definitely in future things want to put more New England in, because it ends up being very old England. Mm-hmm. But we intend to add some more of local fishing ports of New Bedford, of Boston.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Stuff like that. Stuff that's local to me. Where I can go and pot around these ports. The New Bedford Whaling Museum was amazing research. I took a trip with some friends from down Salem way to visit it, actually our artist, in the early stages, so that we could get some research and some ideas for scrim chanting and based on actual scrimshaw, stuff like that. What I really wanted to get on screen, more New England. Mm-hmm. And in future, I'd like more textile stuff. We got some stuff with the spinning and the rag mats and such, but I want to do more textile stuff. Mm-hmm. Anything from y'all?
Not for me.
Shads, you're grinning. Okay. Why are you grinning?
I was just, you're like, oh, I want to put in some more textile stuff. I'm like, yeah, and there's Nama's rug hooking.
There you go. Nice,
yeah.
What you can't see, dear listeners, is that I believe that Shads is crocheting and I'm knitting right now. Life imitates art. All right. For next up, Ash again, always bringing the good ones. What was the most difficult element of the story to translate to audio format?
I don't write things. I don't think I can soundscape or communicate in audio. But there were a couple of times that we struggled to get it exactly right. Because perfect is the enemy of done, but I still keep trying for perfect anyway.
That is my philosophy of here's my tweaks, but also a done episode and a finished episode is the episode that we need to have.
So there was,
again, I work for a production company. We have deadlines. Go, go, go.
The scene where Ran sings to the eel as it dies was saved by Ray reminding us that they did a slightly different take while recording. Because
we went back and forth on that one.
We went back and forth on that for so much, trying to make it sound like the song was in the scene and not like a fourth wall beyond non-diegetic thing. And they'd done another take that was... They'd done a take of it whilst we were actually recording that actually was much more in the scene than...
Because they were crying and breathing hard. It was less the polished version of the song and more this is Ran on the deck singing, which turned out great.
I had to overcome my urge to make the song be good and perfect everywhere and be like, no, this is supposed to be this character's singing to a dying creature in the middle of a storm. They're not supposed to be like doing it all picture perfect.
Mid-song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I struggled a lot with points when the dialogue should be difficult to hear, but making it so that the audience can actually hear it. So, for instance, noisy ship in rough water. How do I get across noisy ship in rough water with can still hear the dialogue? So like, I think Miria and William Wellman's characters might have been a little bit too faint in episode 4 because they were supposed to be across the ship from the listener. And it's probably harder to tell what they were saying, which is annoying for the person who wants to hear what kind of plot they're getting across, but also is accurate for the way it positioned the characters in. And I'm sure there is mixing magic you can do there that deals with that, but I don't know it. Yeah. Actually,
my thanks to J.E. Haywood, one of our ensemble, and also a little bit to myself, for our various audio processing and hearing issues of being the ones who would catch when it was mixed too loud.
Yeah, get you someone hearing impaired to make sure that your stuff is audible. Like I had
she was very, very helpful in that. Thank you, Jesse. All my props to her.
I had a fight with low-pass filters to make Mike sound like he's in a mask and also tell what he's saying in the mask as well. I just...
That was
hard. I need to get better at mixing, basically. I'm a filthy casual.
Okay. Question 15. Moss. At what point in the process did you come up with the name Eeler's Choice? Throwing shit at the wall and Googling for SEO.
Search engine optimization. Please be aware that if you call your thing the X podcast, you will be competing with a million other the X podcasts.
My personal worries are the string of numbers archive experiment. Whatever, it there's a million of them.
Yeah,
and it's very hard to
whatever title you give your thing. Google it and see if it's the first. See if there are any other hits for it.
And if it's really difficult to spell, it's going to be very hard for people to look up. So that's that's quick. Ash, what part of the show are you most proud of? Broadly inclusive show production, website, publicity, acting, writing, whatever.
Can someone else, can I give this to an actor first while I think?
Okay. What part of the show I'm personally most proud of? This show is my baby and I love it. The thing that I'm most proud of right now is what we got to do working with so many new people, so many talented people, people I'd admired, people who I'd looked up to when starting my acting career. Hi, Tanya.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Getting to work with these kind of folks and create something that I'm really proud of was awesome. That would be what I'm the proudest of.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm answering the question correctly, but you know what? That's my answer.
You're
not my mom.
With me, it's... Honestly, I think it's the music. So, brief tragic loop backstory. I had my confidence knocked as a musician by an unpleasant person who was a very good guitarist in a not very good band who told me that I was bad at music, basically undermined my musical abilities. And it took me years to be able to write songs again. And I still can't really write them as myself. I can only write them within the context of LARP or within a fictional setting where it doesn't feel like it's me. So reading the nice things people have said about the music is kind of boosting the confidence that I lost. Like, maybe I can do the music thing? Like,
yes, you can. They're incredible earworms. Like, it's great.
Thank you.
One of the things that people comment on first when recommending the show is the music. And we did immediately make quite a lot more money than we expected to on Bandcamp the moment we released it. So I would say that your music is very, very popular.
Season blows my mind, it really does. Season 2 funding, yay.
Season 2 funding. All that money goes to season 2.
Yeah,
if you want to support us.
Cheers.
Anybody else want to say something they're proud of? Or just Gannett, Shads, and Tanya?
I just like the way it all came together. It sounds like a movie. So I'm proud of just the end product. It's really such a fun group to be part of and project to work on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's pretty much the same here. Like, I had several of my friends and partner listen to it, and everyone was just shocked at the production value. Like, you hear a friend say, oh yeah, I was in a podcast, and I'm like, are they just humoring me clicking on this? But everyone came back so genuinely impressed. Like, everyone.
Ugh. This is the first show. I've worked in podcasting. Now it is my full-time job. This is my fourth year. This is the first show I've ever gotten one of my friends to listen to.
Wow.
They finally did it. I've done it. I've won. The homies like it.
We don't get enough feedback in podcasting, so it's
true. We don't, yeah.
I thrive on praise. Tell me you love me.
Yeah. And anytime a new episode dropped and me buddy would see it and would go on the giant tears on Tumblr, like writing a full page on it, I'm like, Philippe Le Guin, I love you.
My favorite episode 4 is for you and only you.
Hang on a sec.
Okay.
It is, yeah, I mean, when you're in audio fiction, people, you're like, oh, I'm in a podcast, and you're like, oh, is it when there's two people talking to each other? No, it's more like a really complicated play.
I had to explain at family lunch to a bunch of old people what my full-time job is. And the way I landed on was, it's like radio plays, but online.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, and they sort of got it.
I live in perpetual fear of the time like my mom or my dad like found something. Ugh. I tell them what I'm doing.
Deniability.
Like,
we're gonna put a bigger mustache on you over your mustache. It's a disguise. Lou wouldn't be having two mustaches. Okay, question 17, Annie Mac. How old/big would the giant eels get if they weren't hunted? How long does it take one to mature to breeding age? Big and old.
People want the lore. You will get the lore later. Yeah. Stuff it's possible to get into without big spoilers. Very big, yeah, indeed. So very, very big indeed.
Very big.
Old ones can get very large, easily whale-sized, maybe even blue whale-sized. Mm-hmm. I think it's sounded about a decade to get to breeding age, something like that.
Wait, we'll talk.
Yeah. Long maturity.
We'll talk. It's not quite cemented yet, but no. This is actually spoilers. We can't actually talk about this.
No, we can't.
We can't talk about this. This will show up later. They get very old and they get very big.
Yeah,
and that is what you get from us right now.
Yeah.
All right. Another one from Annie. IRL, there are some deep sea species that take a very long time to get to true maturity. We didn't know that, and the total population plummeted as the number of quality spawning adults declined. Are the fishers and Esmas pressing in on the spawning grounds because there aren't as many great eels growing up and breeding? Or is it just take more and sell more to make money? So the answer to this is basically what's akin to the hunting of trophy animals, especially in the US. There's this thing with fish, especially rough fish and game fish that aren't seen as valuable, where they will hunt the biggest ones. And then there is now a selection pressure to not grow large.
Mm-hmm.
And the really big fish tend to be older. So basically the answer is yes. This is based on the real life phenomenon that giant eels aren't getting big enough because an eel of that size is easier to catch. and an eel of that size has to reach a certain age to get that big, and they aren't getting that big because they get caught too early.
So selecting for small
and
ones.
Because they are hunting, it's over hunting leading to a population crash because not enough adults are getting to breeding size.
Yeah,
so that's the answer to that. Bringing it back to our next question.
Okay.
Since Tanya has had to pop off. Number 19. Goblin eel enthusiast. Great name.
Nice.
Honestly, like, that kicks ass. What inspired your world building? Did you intentionally draw from any media or real world experiences? It gives me some Elden Ring vibes, for example. Thanks for making the podcast.
You're welcome.
So, world building, a lot of it came from both real-world folklore and our various special interests, mine being ocean and textile shit. It, for me, media and real-world experience, the Silt Versus.
Yeah.
It's the Silt Versus. I fucking love the Silt Versus.
We love you, Big
There's
Brother Crab.
There's a lot
Crab.
Of that inspiration. We love you, Big Brother Crab.
We love you, Moon and John.
They're so good. I think B mentioned that John might have listened to some of it, and I actually fucking screamed.
Just,
I was like, oh my god, that's so cool that the people who it helped inspire us to make this might have listened to our show.
Big fans.
They did send us a very lovely email upon release saying congratulations, which was so sweet. Thank you, John. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Muna. We love you.
Inspirations.
inspirations. Those are mine.
Okay. Yeah. Obviously, the Silt Versus. We love you, Big Brother Crab. We share quite a few cast members with them. Obviously, New England and Whitby.
We are now cast members.
We
are the cast members we share with them, Lou. We're both on it.
There's loads.
There's loads.
It's just
six or seven.
A wet horror crossover. My inspirations are obviously whaling in the town of Whitby, upon which Eskmouth is based, New England whaling as well. The game Dishonored.
We actually, all the ship names are taken from real ships.
Yes, they are.
The New Bedford Whaling Museum has basically ship manifests and logs of a bunch of ships from that time. So these are all real whaling ships.
Yep, yeah, we paired them up, the ones that have the same first names to be the paired eeling ships. Same letter in their first names.
Yeah, same letter.
So the game Dishonored was an inspiration for me. The book Greenwich by Susan Cooper. A lot of Ailed by Catch is, you'll see in that book.
Yeah.
The whole Darkest Rising series, in fact, is a big inspiration. Actual folk magic and actual magic.
Folk magic. Yeah. I used a lot of New World Witchery
and
a lot of book called Folklore of the Sea.
Stormcalling has elements of Viking magic in it. The beacon platform is based on something called Utiseta, which is a form of Viking magic where a sorcerer would sit out in nature alone to get them on a platform to get them in the right frame of mind for working magic. So the whole thing is heavily influenced by Northern European folk magic tradition, parts of it that were brought to America. There are elements of English, Welsh, Scottish, Scandinavian magic.
Yeah.
Elvery Jack, for instance, is based on the Mari Llwyd and the Welsh creepy Welsh horse thing,
which I
am... and Chad's informed us also has an equivalent in an ugly stick, was it? Mm-hmm. On the subject of Newfoundland isn't real. Apparently, that what's that? You put a boot on a broom and then...
And also probably a bucket on the top, and you nail a bunch of beer bottle caps in various places to it so it jangles when you stomp it on the ground.
Okay, yeah. just putting something weird on a stick and going around annoying people with it is an ancient folk tradition.
It's true. There's definitely some New England magic, both taken from the local, from the colonizer traditions, the traditions of the English, the Irish, some of the Portuguese that were around here, and I believe there is some influence from the local indigenous traditions as well, though I would be hard pressed to tell you exactly what after 400 years of it getting mixed in a soup.
Hmm.
our real world experience and our favorite stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are we all done with that one, I think?
Yeah.
Question 20. We're almost done. From Bryn. So I pretty much know how Daisy got the idea for the story. When was the moment you knew, hey, we can make a show out of this? What was the catalyst? So our dear listeners don't know how I got the idea for the story. So the short version of this is I was working on a campus of oceanography at the time where I was attending school. And one nasty day in January, actually, at time of recording, 6 days from now, it will be a year. One nasty day in January, I was sent out to pick up trash in what we call the boneyard, which is a place where they leave old boats and nets and oyster traps and trash and dumpsters and all this stuff just left out there to rot. And I've been listening to my beloved Silt Verses, and I started thinking, what kind of a saint or a god would haunt this place? What would find root here? And I saw the image of Ailed Bycatch in my mind, a 100-foot monster made of the corpses of the dead trapped in nets, a spirit of the rage of those who had been caught and cast aside and died for nothing and were useless. And I said, fuck, that's good. But I can't write. What am I going to do with that? So I went around and, like, in a couple audio servers that I was in, audio drama creator servers, I posted, like, here's this great idea I have. Does anyone want it? Or does anyone want to make it with me? And Lou said, that fucks.
Yeah.
And that's how we became friends.
Like, yeah, all right. That sounds great. That sounds like my jam. Let's have some fish horror. Yeah.
Yeah. So now you know the story. When was the moment we knew we could make a show out of this? It felt pretty instant.
Let's make a show.
We just went, oh yeah, this would be good.
We spent a good, like, weekend just brainstorming ideas back and forth. Just
throwing spaghetti at the wall, figuring like, out what.
What if we did this? What if it's a town? What if it's a whaling town? What if it's, you know,
what if it's Scrimshaw?
What if it's, yeah, let's, what if there's bone magic?
I recorded this cane foley last week. Can we have a cane user character?
Why not two?
Why not two? Hey, if we want to do mixed narration and dialogue, and we want to include disabled characters, let's add more disabled characters.
Yeah.
And we had Barry.
I definitely, like, my previous show, The Pantaloon Society, I had a lot of queer representation. But I didn't have any, I had very minimal disability representation. So I wanted to have disabled characters front and center in this, like the main characters needed to have. And importantly, the disabilities would not be magically cured.
Very important.
Better prosthetics might be made, but the disability will not be magically cured.
I'm disabled myself, so I wanted to...
Same.
A bit of Nama's disability is taken from my own experience of just chronic leg pain, use your cane, get around, but sometimes there's really not much you can do. It'll always be there. Mm-hmm. That early stuff with Nama, that's a bit of my own experience.
Another thing I wanted to avoid with the disability representation was the magical blind person trope.
Ah, yes. We had to make sure that we could have a blind character who used magic and it not be that trope.
So the reason that Mary and Prin are twins who have the same level of magic and
just using
one of them is partially sighted, one of them isn't, and they use it differently to avoid the magical blind, because just all the people who are magical, the magic does not come from the being blind. Let's have no daredevils here. Let's have no, let's have no,
yeah.
Also, desperately trying to avoid the magical indigenous person trope. Because that's just as... Yeah.
That we definitely don't want to do.
Yeah.
Okay, so the answer to that question is the moment we had the idea, we knew there was a podcast.
Yeah,
I also have a weakness in that podcasting is my hobby and my full-time job and what I do with my friends and my life. So I don't care about other mediums. If I have an idea, it's going into a podcast.
It's just so much more of an accessible medium as well. The only mediums that were accessible have ever been accessible to me, because I tried traditional publishing and I just got knocked back. The only people who have ever let me tell my stories have been LARPers and podcasters, because there is very little gatekeeping, and long may that remain. And you can tell
God's
the
willing.
Weirdest, queerest, disabledest, diversest story you want to, and no one can stop you because Acast exists.
No one can stop us.
And, you know, Podbean exists, and you can just put it on the internet. No one can stop you.
And no one can, and no one ever no will. One I will can... continue to make weird shit. The next thing that I have scripted, it's so much fucking weirder than this.
There's no one to say, oh, that won't sell in China, or, you know, or don't you think that you should dial the queerness back a bit? No, no, everybody, this is Eskimoth, and everyone here is gay and trans.
Kill the marketing executive in your head.
Yeah.
Just make what you want to make. Okay, 21, Ghostly Goat.
Good name.
I really enjoyed the intro and outro music. Who produced the amazing music and the songs throughout the first 6 episodes of Yeller's Choice? Will a soundtrack be released?
I did not write this, I promise.
Nope. I know that you did not write this because you would never be so nice to yourself unprompted.
Yeah. Thank you, Ghostly Goat. Yes, it was me. And yes, there is a soundtrack. It is on elaschoice.bandcamp.com. There is a soundtrack on Bandcamp if you want, which has all the songs and bits of the incidental music that I thought were particularly good as tracks. I think I've already talked about the music quite a lot, to be honest.
All right, yeah. We've talked about it a bit. But yes, thank you very much for your kind words. You can support us on Bandcamp with the beautiful music made by our lovely Lou Sutcliffe and with our Anguilliform
with
chorus.
With the wonderful cast members who sang for me as well. Some of them, as I say, after I've press ganged them in a castle.
Honestly, wasn't it... This is actually... Some of the music informed it because I remember we were deciding if we needed to pull someone for Ailed Bycatch, and the answer ended up, I can sing the part so I can do the voice.
Yeah.
That ended up being why I ended up playing her, because I could sing her song.
Some people... Like, some parts were deliberately cast because of singing voices.
Mm-hmm.
And the dramatic difference between the singing voice and speaking voice, and how sort of interesting that would be, the music.
I remember Ray's voice as Ran speaking, contrasted with their singing. You really liked.
Yes, that difference was. Honestly, music was baked into it right from the start. As I say, music and food, two things that make a world more rich.
I'm going to get you to talk to me about that, but I know it's getting on 2 a.m. for you, so we're going to crack on.
Yeah.
A lot of people asked, please tell me more about scrim chanting, where the idea came from, because it's incredibly cool and also such a unique element. Can you clarify how the magic system works? Like, what can scrim chanting control and what can it not?
No, because that would be spoilers, but...
Yeah. The idea of scrim chanting came from both Lou's use of music and the concept of scrimshaw, which is a form of bone carving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How the magic system works will come up later.
A lot of our ideas from the series came from whaling in New England and indeed Old England and the port of Whitby in Yorkshire. And we threw a lot of ideas around related to that. For example, the eel boats, as we've said, have names from New England Whalers Register of Ships. For those that haven't heard the word, scrimshaw is carving on bone or ivory, often done by whalers. It's actually a name. It's a Scottish one as well. So I like to imagine some sort of Scottish sailor started doing it first. So scrim chanting, which is a terrible word to say and would never evolve in the real world because people would have relied it into something that was easier to say, is magically forming things out of bone. I'm sorry to all the voice actors who've had to do so. Faye Roberts really rolls that R. Regarding the magic, again, difficult to answer this without spoiling, but eel bone is very... Well, I mean, we know this from the first series, that eel bone, from the way Prynne responds to it, that eel bone is very loud to the magic system.
It responds very, very strongly to those with a scrim chanting ability.
There is a reason for that, but it's spoilers. But its resonances are easy for a scrim chant to pick up and use to magically change its shape. Everything else also has resonances, but only Merry and Prynne are the ones with a good enough ear to pick up the resonances of anything else. And that is established...
Of the people we've met so far.
Of the people we've met so far. And that is established in the first series, that basically the music and the magic are intertwined with each other, and your ear for the music and the magic is what informs your ability to change things and to shape the world.
Okay. All right. Question 23. I've called like so many storms.
Good to know. Good to know.
Yeah. Thank you. From I've called like so many storms. How important is the type of string in storm calling? Blethyn says that chandelry thread wouldn't work for the spell to rescue Mary, but it still works fine aside from the trance, which seems more likely caused by Rand's lack of experience. Thank you for making Ealer's choice. I love it.
You're all welcome.
Okay, so string. Thank you for listening. String. The thing about the string used in storm calling is you could, this is my expertise in thread magic, so correct me if I'm wrong, Lou. You could do thread magic with any form of thread. However, there is a certain way that thread is spun that makes it more powerful called if you spin something clockwise is the typical way you are taught to spin. But if you spin counterclockwise, that is called witch's thread.
Witchins.
I spin
yeah.
all of my thread witch's thread because I use it for my witching. I actually did spin the Stormcaller's thread for this. And it was kind of a bitch. I'm not great at hemp. But the reasons that the Stormcaller's thread, it works the way it does is because both the way it is spun, the magical colors associated with it, the blue and the silver. I believe the blue for the ocean and silver for the air. Am I correct?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And the components of it as a hemp or linen thread without adding any wax or dye beyond the dyes used for, again, those magical colorants. So the reason that that thread is used more is to make it more powerful. It would be easier to control and easier to summon. However, any thread will work in a pinch.
Yeah. So, like, Blethyn is a storm calling conservative. That's a small C. Small C, David. Small C. He's a traditionalist, so everything has to be done a very specific way. The vibes must be correct. This is how magic works. The more aligned the vibes, the more effective it is. The less off-target effects there are.
I'm sorry, children. Your storm calling vibes are just rancid.
If your vibes are rancid, you call the wrong eel.
Blethyn's staring down at Ran. Their vibes, they're...
I'm sorry, lads. Rancid. Your vibes are just utterly rancid, you know? You're doing it all wrong. Yeah. So most of the things that go wrong do go wrong because of Ran's lack of experience. Maybe they wouldn't have gone quite as wrong if the correct thread has been used. Can't really say any more about mechanics because it would need me to go into big spoilers. But yeah, like, as with... IRL magic, you can just do it. You can do everything under the correct stars and moons, and or you can do it, you know, with a brass freak in a sock. But like the more the vibes are correct, the more powerful the magic is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That I think that's covered that. So our final question from a lot of people, including Goblin Eel enthusiasts. Mm-hmm. I love this world you've built, and I'm excited to hear more.
Thank you.
It's worthy of being its own TTRPG, and it's my opinion, but for now, will there be another season? And the answer to this question is, Ealer's Choice will return
when it's good and ready. is it worthy of its being into... I don't know, let's go and talk to the nice people who made the Sylvester's RPG.
Honestly, I would be so down. Well, who is it? Gabriel? Gabriel was super nice about the show?
Yeah, because apparently one of them has listened, so...
Hey, Gabriel, hit us up. We're interested.
Maybe.
But yes, the answer to when Ealer's Choice will return is when it's good and ready. We do intend to have more Ealer's Choice. However, we are two mortal men.
Yeah, we are two.
And this was a very large undertaking, and we will need a lot of time to make the future season or seasons of Ealer's Choice be as good as they can be. So
yeah.
Keep your eyes peeled. You'll see some more stuff on this feed as we go on. Not consistently, but every once in a while we'll pop something out to tide you over until season two.
But yeah.
But
we are two disabled people with full-time jobs.
Exactly. It is a little bit of a busy thing, but it will return. keep your eyes peeled. Keep telling your friends. Keep leaving reviews. Keep making the gorgeous fan art from all of you that we have loved to see. Mm-hmm. That is the stuff that gets us excited to be like, people like our stuff. Now I'm in the mood to write. So thank you all so much for your wonderful support. Is there anything either of you want to say to the listeners at home before we pop off?
Well, yeah, thank you, everybody who's listened. Thank you to the cast and the crew and the illustrators and the chorus. Thank you to everybody who's listened. Thank you to everybody who said everything really nice to us. This is my first big many cast project when it's not just me yattering along to myself. So that it's gone this well is quite touching to me, especially how much everybody's been enjoying the music, which is a skill I am working on. Thank you. You're all great.
Yeah. Thank you all very much for listening. This is not my first large cats project, but it is my first project that I created. Not solo, but outside of the auspices of a team giving me the orders. So it's been very fun to work towards creating something with my marvelous creator here and make something that is just so fun and has so much of what we love in it. Thank you all very much for everything and all of your support. All right. All of our information, as always, can be found in the show notes. That includes our website, social media, Bandcamp, and Ko-fi. If you want to support us, you can find us there. If you want to contact us, you can do it at our email or on any of our social medias. If you like the show, please leave us a review and tell your friends. That is how you get the word out and help us keep making this the wriggliest content imaginable. All right, if that's all, I have been Daisy.
And I've been Lou.
And Chad's is still here.
Just lurking in the background. Hey.
All right, and thank you very much for listening.